shepherds meant to reduce the number of their sheep and scatter them, and the good rulers are supposed to do the same with their citizens? Let us look into this question, Athenians. And the questions of the solitary, unarmed philosopher made the faces of tyrants turn pale, while the eyes of the young flared with the fire of indignation and righteous anger. When Athenians strolled away from the square after the sentence and recalled all this, their hearts clenched from a vague doubt. Had we done a cruel injustice to the son of Sophroniscus? But then the good Athenians gazed at the bay and the sea. In the light of the fading sunset, crimson sails of a ship with a sharp bow, the ship of the Delos celebrations, could still be seen against the blue water. The ship had left the bay that very day, and would return only in a month. Until then, no blood could be spilled in Athens, guilty or innocent. There were many days in a month, and even more hours. Who could stand in the way of the son of Sophroniscus, if he were sentenced unjustly, to turn away from prison? Wouldn't his numerous friends help him? Would it be so difficult for the wealthy Plato, Aeson, and others to bribe the prison guards? Then the restless gadfly could fly away from Athens to join the barbarians of Thessaly, or Peloponnese, or even further, to Egypt. Athenians would never hear his troubling words, and this death would not burden the conscience of the good citizens. Thus, everything would work out to everyone's benefit. Many thought this way that evening, praising the wisdom of the Demos and the Heliastes, and secretly hoping the troublesome philosopher would get out of Athens, flee the hemlock in favor of barbarians, at the same time freeing his fellow citizens from himself and from the pangs of conscience of an innocent death. The sun rose from beyond the ocean and dropped into it 32 times since then. 32 fewer days were left until the day when Athenians decided to build a monument to Socrates. The ship returned from Delos, and, as if ashamed for its native city, stood in the bay with sadly fallen sails. There was no moon in the sky. The sea roiled under a thick coverlet of fog, and lights in the hills glimmered through the murk, like half-closed eyes of people overcome with shame. The stubborn Socrates did not spare the conscience of the good Athenians. Farewell! You go to your hearths, and I shall go to my death, he said to his judges after the sentence. I do not know, my friends, which one of us had picked a better lot. When the ship's return drew nearer, many citizens felt uneasy. Would this stubborn man truly die? And they started shaming Aeson, Theodonus, and other friends and students of Socrates, urging them to act. Will you truly, they said with vitriolic reproach, allow your teacher to die? Or can't you spare a few minas to bribe the guards? Crito pleaded in vain to convince Socrates to flee, and complained bitterly because the public accused him of being a bad friend and a greedy man. But the stubborn philosopher did not wish to satisfy either his pupils or the good people of Athens. Let us look into this question, he said. If it turns out I must flee, I shall flee. But if I must die, then I shall die. Let us remember. Did we not say it wasn't death that ought to frighten a sensible man, but